So last week, there was an incredible teaching. It was an amazing time. I don't know how it translated on home, but we had people on their knees, and something happened I've never seen happen before. That in the middle of this spiritual moment, Matt Larson actually said, "Simon says, keep your hands up," and no one flinched. This is like incredible. Like that. Well done. Well done, church. But we had, right, everyone's on their knees, hands raised, saying, "I want more of the Spirit. I want more of that. I want a bigger taste." And that's incredible. But my experience is, if you haven't already, very soon you're going to encounter this wall that we're going to erect because, yes, God, I want more of you. I want more of you. But I kind of want you on my terms. Right? I want you to bless me, and to when I pray, I want to feel you're right there with me. When I'm doing stuff with my family, I want your love towards us. I want to feel you, Lord. I want to understand more about you. But if the Lord wants to do something beyond that, well, maybe I don't really want to hear your voice that much. And I think we have a kind of a breakdown in our own mind that we have a lot of fear. Right, even in the anthem values that Christian just read, this idea of pushing into the uncomfortable. I love being comfortable. That's why we have couches, right? It's a good thing to be comfortable, but why would I want to invite the Lord to make me uncomfortable? That just sounds foolish. And because of that, we fundamentally say, God, you know what? If I surrender myself to you, you're going to send me somewhere I don't want to go. Right? That's the old Christian college prayer. Don't ever surrender your life or else you're going to go somewhere and you're going to have to do something you do not want to do. And so we just eventually say, well, Lord, just bless the thing I'm doing right here in my life, in my house, in the way I want to structure my life. And then we wonder, where's the Lord's voice? So I think there's a fear of the cost of opening ourselves up to the Spirit. But I also think when we introduce this idea of mission, which the whole sermon I was going to preach, Matt preached last week. I was like, dang it, he stole my point about how the Spirit leads us into mission. But when we have this fear that when it comes to me representing Jesus, I am fundamentally not enough and I must change the person I am. Right? The people who live mission, they go somewhere else, right? Or maybe they're very good with their words and they have apologetics, right? They study and they know how to defend the faith. They can do all these things. And you have these huge people who write books and they just do all this. And like, I'm not that person. So I don't know if I can really do it well. Or maybe I have to be an extrovert, right? I just got to go. I just got to be that person who walks in a room and instantly goes and goes and goes. Or you got to be like a pro. You have to study the apologetics and every conversation you find a way to turn it into a spiritual moment. Can we just talk about the Dodgers? By the way, Justin Turner, you guys hear? There we go. Or some form of online influencer, whatever the heck that means, right? But I think if we can start over the idea of mission, if we can check our ideas at the door, we can build something that I think is a compelling life. It's a life that the Lord invites us into that we get to do. So let's begin. There we go. Get the cotton mouth. So when we think about mission, what is it? It's simply continuing the work of Jesus. That's it. Christian referenced the book of Acts earlier. The very first sentence in the book of Acts, it says, you know, here's the writer Luke, and he begins this, that my previous account of what Jesus began. Wait, how is that possible, though? Because the book of Luke, Jesus goes up into heaven. What do you mean he began to do? But the reality is, yes, Jesus, he had this amazing mission that he is God sent to earth. He lives among us. He reveals the way to heaven. He reveals this is what God is really like. You think it's religion? No, God actually wants to relate to you as a father. And the good news is the Father loves you so much. He sent me to come get you, to bring you home. But that's just the beginning of the work. While we don't get to die on the cross, he died, he rose, he accomplished everything we need for salvation. But that was the beginning of the story of God redeeming and reconciling the whole world. And the book of Acts is part 2. Then the first century was part three. And the fourth, you know, we keep getting all these parts to where we have, like, you know, the famous Acts 29 chapter, which is us. We are living out the mission of God. We continue that. I love it. In the book of John, we're going to be studying that. I love the book of John. It's one of my favorite books in the entire Bible. But Jesus, in John 8, he says, I am the light of the world. But if you look at the Sermon on the Mount, the very beginning, he says, you are the light of the world. It's this idea of, like, I'm passing this baton. I'm going to give you my mission, and you're going to keep carrying this wherever you go. If that wasn't too on the head, John 20, 21 says this. Jesus, he's already risen from the grave, and he says, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, even so I am sending you. So part of what it means to be a Christian, a Christian, a little Christ, is that we carry Christ with us everywhere we go. We are the sent ones from God. He says, you're the family. Go represent. Go find them. Go recruit to the party. I have more kids who want to come home. Now, I don't know if anything I've said so far anyone would disagree with, but if you're like me, if it's not practical, it's kind of worthless. So, okay, I'm the sent one of God. Now what? So I want to spend most of our time today just asking the question, how? How do I live as a person who is sent from by Jesus? How do I live as a person who is on mission? And so I'm going to run the risk of being overly reductive today. I'm going to have a three-point sermon. So I apologize in advance. I'm hoping this works. But the first thing, and if you want to write this down, if you take notes, I love fill in the blank. There's no fill in the blank anymore. But open your life. How do you begin to live a life on mission? Well, open up your life. The first example we have of mission is Jesus, right? We're continuing his mission. Let's look at how he did it. And Jesus, who knows all there is to know, right? The Spirit can give him all knowledge. But he chose not to only teach, not to just run around and run, you know, a door-to-door campaign of letting people know the truth about God. He said, these 12 high school students, come with me. Come see how I live. Come walk and see how I go to weddings. Come see how we party. Come see how we eat. And he invites his closest followers to just be with him for 3 years. He opens up his life. That's the hardest thing you could possibly do. And they still come to the conclusion, you are clearly God among us. He opens up his life. 1 Thessalonians 2:8. If you want to turn there with me. 1 It's one of those little books in the back of the Bible. This is written by Paul. Now, once again, Paul, this is a guy who writes Bible, which if you want to have something on your resume, writing Bible, it's up there. And Paul, the person who we will study to explain things of God, listen to what he actually says about mission. To this church in Thessalonica, he says, so being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our own selves, because you've become very dear to us. Get this. Paul is actually saying, we love you so much, we didn't only tell you true things. Super important. He said, but I love you so much, I actually let you come eat with me. Our kids, you know, I'm going to go off text here, but our kids grew up together. We played together. We coached each other's t-ball teams. We love you so much. I'm bringing you in. I'm showing you everything. Oh, and I'm going to tell you the truth as well, but that's how much I love you. I'm bringing you in. He opens his life. For me, as evident and plain as this is, right, this first point, open your life. Okay, how do you really start with that? This wasn't true for me. I had an epiphany about 8 years ago where I was, Kristen already mentioned EV Free. I was a youth pastor there. That's where I first met Matt. We were high school and middle school youth pastors together. But I had this very busy life, right? My daughter was just born, and I was full, like three or four nights a week. I'm an extrovert, so I have people over, I'm doing things. And I was very busy doing a bunch of really good things in the church. And discipling middle school students, doing all sorts of stuff. But then this question haunted me because I realized I don't have any significant relationships with people far from God. I had completely clustered myself into a Christian context. It was even my job. But the book of James, it says, for the person who knows what they're supposed to do and they don't do it, that can be sin. And for me, I recognize I had a clear mandate on my life. And for me not to live in that mandate, I was like, Lord, I think I'm living wrong. All these good things crowded out the very mission the Lord gave me. And they were all good. And so 8 years ago, I recognized that if my life was full, I'm going to have to remove a few things so I can create space to do nothing. So I can fill that eventually with people. So that meant playing in, doing a lot of things in the front yard and getting to know the neighborhood a bit better. It meant having kids is like a gold mine because you're forced to interact with people and stuff like that. So it meant, you know what? I'm going to volunteer at my daughter's preschool. I'm going to do these different things. I'm a bit of a sports junkie. And what it meant for me is I joined an adult dodgeball league. It's incredible. That's been like one of the hardest things of not having that going on right now. But for me, all of a sudden, I just start having a good time. Like, these are things I would actually want to do, but I told myself I was too busy to do them. And then all of a sudden at dodgeball, we'd go to cronies afterwards, and we're sitting around, and everyone's having a beer, and people were screaming out Adele songs off key. And all of a sudden, years into this, conversations start to happen, and someone starts sharing, this is what my sister's going through. She was suicidal and this and that, and I can barely hear the person while people are literally screaming karaoke. And the Lord's saying, that's the spot where I've sent you. Go play dodgeball in my name. I'm like, oh, this is incredible. I love it. And despite my size, I'm actually good at it. And I think we can assume that mission is some arduous thing I have to do. But believe it or not, this is the Lord saying, go have fun in my name. Go enjoy. Right? There's plenty of verses. We just think that's like some metaphorical, like, oh yeah, taste and see that the Lord is good because at some point it must be good, right? It's like, no, enjoy. Live this life. When you're living a life that's actually full of joy, believe it or not, people might want to have a piece of that. And so open your life. I had to begin by making a choice that I am going to not pursue some people sometimes just so I can actually make room for people that the Lord has called me into. And I haven't even met them yet. Make this choice. One of my favorite stories, I just met them. I've been trying to meet as many folks as I can here. I love it. I'm an extrovert. I just want to meet you all. So by the way, I'm coming your way. I want to meet you. But I met, I think it's Andrew and Lauren Fry. That name sounds right. Okay, thumbs up. I said it right. They started a few years ago just having a happy hour on their block. That everyone who lived on the street wanted to be a neighbor. And they're like, well, what if we just all come out our front doors and we just have a few drinks and we just talk? And for years, they began this rhythm. Granted, COVID messes a bunch of stuff up, but a few years in, someone who had never reached out, who had never really been a part of it, was going through a crisis and suddenly knocks on their door because they were the only people that they knew to turn to in a moment of crisis because they knew there was something there. That's what we're talking about. This is not insane. So even though we have this, right, 2021, there's still have COVID stuff, we have a million reasons why we can't do mission. Right? So if I get to know my neighbor, what am I doing? Like, proceed with caution, proceed with wisdom, right? If someone doesn't want you at their front door, don't go to their front door. But just because something's hard doesn't mean we don't do it. In fact, the part of me, like, I love it when things are hard. That means it's actually worth my energy. It's actually worth my time. It's actually worth my all the stuff going on up here. I can pour my energy towards doing something that's not just easy, that's fun. And so I'd love, as we go through this conversation here, take a moment and just slow down and think. Is the Lord bringing someone to your mind right now? Or maybe it's a family, or maybe it's something. Maybe he wants you to pursue them. Maybe he wants you to begin a relationship. Maybe you already know them, or maybe you've never met them, but you've seen them drive by your neighborhood. Start thinking of that person as we keep going through this. So if the first point is to open your life, the second one's this: listen. Listen and join their story. I'm a bit of a nerd, and one of my favorite movies is Star Wars. And Star Wars, who is that? There it is, okay. Star Wars, it begins, you have this epic John Williams musical theme, right? Bum, ba-da-da, and all that. It sounds like, oh, this is gonna be incredible. And then they hit you with like 3 to 4 paragraphs of words, which is the worst way to begin a movie. But the idea is we're gonna drop you into a story. You're not gonna know who's who. You're not gonna know what's going on, but guess what? There's a trade federation. They're doing some stuff over here. This person's on the run. This person's a wanted fugitive. Like, you recognize I'm dropping into a story that's already been going on. That's true when it comes to mission as well. That you and I, we are rarely going to be the first person to ever interact with them on a spiritual level. That everyone you talk to, think about this, even in this tent, even online, everyone is going through different things right now. We've had spiritual moments. We've had near-death experiences. We've been dealing with loss, or we've been dealing with joy. We have these unexplainable questions that have been going on. Things that like literally demand an answer. And most of our life, we're like, well, I'm just going to get a coffee. I'll just do this. But I still have these questions. And we're entering into someone else's story. And recognize you're not beginning this. You're continuing the work the Lord has done. So I'd like you guys to turn. This is where we're gonna camp out for us today. John chapter 4. Like I said, book of John. We're not going through it yet, but I'm basically spending all of our time there. So John chapter 4, verse 35. So Jesus just has this amazing encounter with this woman at the well, and then she leaves. We're going to go into her story in a minute, but then he suddenly starts to talk to his disciples because they start to ask questions like, why are you talking to her? What's going on? And then Jesus gives them this very almost cryptic response that's not answering their question, but he's pointing to a much bigger truth of what's happening here. Jesus, in John 4:35, I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest. Even now, the one who reaps draws a wage and harvests a crop for eternal life, so that the sower and the reaper may be glad together. Thus the saying, one sows and another reaps is true. I sent you to reap what you have not worked for. Others have done the hard work, and you have reaped the benefits of their labor. This is a very strange answer to why are you talking to that woman? And Jesus, literally, God among us, Emmanuel, he recognizes that I'm not the first spiritual thing to happen in this woman's life. Now, he's going to be the biggest thing that's going to happen in her life. But he says, like, he gives us these farming principles of saying, you know what? Here's the way the world actually is. That the Lord is sovereignly working through the 7+ billion people at the same time on this planet. And at times, there is a spiritual seed planted in the ground. And sometimes when you talk to someone, it might be a sapling. Or maybe it's a full-grown tree and it's starting to bear fruit. It's like, you don't know what's going on, but the Spirit is the one who is doing the work. So listen. Maybe listen to what the Spirit is doing, but also listen to their story. Listen and hear what their story is. So this is the best news when it comes to mission. It's actually not about you. It's not about you. It's about them. It's what God is doing in their life. And so you aren't starting the work. You are playing a role. In fact, the Lord is saying, I'm looking for people who want to partner with me. I'm looking for people who are willing to step in to have these moments of tending to the vine or tending to this plant. And so you get to be the person that the Lord uses. So what that's going to mean is, the most important thing about you is not your mouth. We worry about what we're going to say so much, we end up not doing anything. Use your ears. We get to listen, right? And so I'd like to ask this question of, what is God doing in this person's life? And I'm not sure, someone gave me this question that goes even a step further. The word gospel means good news. And so the good news is that Jesus is God who doesn't want to judge us. He wants to save us. Well, the word gospel being good news is, what would good news be to this person in their story? Think about it. If a person has dealt with loss and is going through pain, or maybe a person is finding joy, good news might be the Lord is actually with you. Hey, good news, the Lord is not demanding you impress him. He loves you. He, in fact, loves loving you. Right? That could be good news for someone. Good news can be the actual security you're seeking. It's only found in Jesus. So asking the question, what is good news to this person? That's what I want to know about my neighbors. That's what I want to know about the people who I dodgeball with, the people who our kids go to school with. Because then maybe the Lord opens up a moment and I can think through the gospel of, this is what you're doing. I want to share a story, and to be clear, Courtney gave me permission in this story. I like to share stories of whenever I blow it, but this is when she blows it. So this is where I get to introduce my wife. She's amazing. So on our street, for me, I think being a neighbor is very important. The Lord actually called us to be neighbors, and we tend to always think that means the people I work with as opposed to people who I live next to. Well, we decided whenever there's a new person on our neighborhood, we bring them cookies, just try to initiate the conversation saying, hey, we're here for you if you need to know about, like, you know, how the trash cans work and all that kind of basic moving in stuff. And just introduce ourselves. Well, this woman, she jumped on the opportunity, and they moved out here for work. Her husband's the one working. She's stuck at home, brand new baby, and she's just by herself. And she's like, can we hang out? And so Courtney and her start hanging out, and the kids start playing together on some little swing set. And as months go by, it's amazing. She knows, eventually the conversation for us is always like, what does your husband do? And it's like, oh, he's a pastor, which is usually the end of a conversation. But this woman actually says, well, I have a question. I don't want to offend you, but like, what's the deal with Christians? And here we think we have to defend ourselves, but she actually is saying, no, like, what do you believe? Like, I just don't even know. And so Courtney's like, oh my gosh, this is the moment. I have to have the words, right? This is, oh, we've done training on this. And she completely fumbles the ball. She begins to blah, 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 stammer. She mentions like the Trinity. She says just all these different like theological explosions. And then it's like, oh man, I ruined this moment. What's God gonna do? But because they're friends, they just keep hanging out and they keep having conversations. And the words didn't ruin the moment, because she was listening and she heard her story. Now, there's no bow on this story, but I'm going to tell you what actually ends up happening. That this woman, her and her husband, they move away, go down to San Diego. We find out another conversation, she has a sister who's also a follower of Jesus. They've been not able to talk to the point where she has to ask Courtney about what Christians believe. But through this moment, they've reconnected, and then there's this like, her sister has been praying for years on years for her, but they couldn't talk about this. For some reason, the Lord decided to use a neighbor as opposed to her very sister, but that opened a door. We stepped into her story. We don't get to demand our story. And so we get to use our ears. Now, I've been trying to avoid the words side of this, but the last thing I want to share is this, that we need to share our story. Right? Open your life, listen to their story. And the third one is share your story. Because here in John 4, stay there, we actually have the story of one of the best evangelists in the New Testament. Here's her life. If you look at the beginning of John 4, you see that she is a woman. She has spent her entire life basically being used and discarded by men. She has tons of joy you can imagine of being married the first time, the excitement of your wedding, of all the things that this promised to have that end. And then divorced again and again and again. And for her, you can imagine what kind of shame, what kind of self-talk are you giving yourself? Because this is not 2021 here in America. This is not marrying because I love someone. This is part of their way that they would interact in their society is only the men could work. So for her to not have a husband means she's basically going to be destitute. And so she has lowered her standards so much that she's staying with a man who's not even willing to commit to her. He's using her. And so her life of living in shame, her life of trying to avoid anything, these are small towns. So the friends she grew up with, they're not sources of comfort and joy. They are sources of shame. You look at their eyes, they must be judging me. So she's orchestrated her whole life avoiding those social situations. That's the person the Lord's saying, awesome. I want to meet her. That's who I'm going to use in my story. And so Jesus steps into this woman in the well. They meet, and she instantly launches into these weird spiritual debate conversations. And she tries to argue with Jesus. That's foolish, right? Don't argue with Jesus on theology. He wins. And so he literally doesn't take the bait. He's not going to get into some spiritual argument with this woman, but he brings a conversation to say, let's talk about your marriage or your lack thereof. Not as a point of shaming her, but as a point of saying, I'm going to step into your story of what actually you're really wondering about. And he has this amazing encounter with this woman. But she would be the worst person to be an evangelist, right? Would you guys agree? Like, we ain't giving her a mic. We ain't doing any things like, we'll love her, but we're going to love her, and it's going to take years and years, and we're going to restore. Like, but the Lord instantly, right then and there, look at verse 28 of John 4. I told you I'd come back to it. This is what happens. The woman left her water jar and went away into the town, and she said to the people, instead of running from people, she now runs towards the people. So she said to them, come, see a man who told me all that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? And people are like, what? So they went out of the town, and they were coming to him. Her entire testimony is, something's happening. You know my story. This guy knows my story. You got to see with me what is happening over here. And that's her entire testimony. You guys know what I've done? He knew what I did, and he didn't run. Scroll down to verse 39. It says, many Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me all that I ever did. So this woman's message is simple. This is my life. This is my experience with Jesus. Come see. Come explore this with me. I don't understand it, but something's happening here. And so the pressure is off once again. It's not about you and your words. You just get to share your story. And so going back to the book of Acts, chapter 1, verse 8, turn there with me. It's Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts. 1:8. This verse is like this thesis statement for the entire book of Acts, and we usually use it for strategy, or maybe we use it for the idea of like the Spirit has to come on you, and the Spirit is going to come on you in power, and he's going to do these things, and he's going to fill your life. But I think we miss the main point of this verse. Look at verse 8. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth. He's not saying you're going to be my telemarketers, you're going to be my online influencers. It's you're a witness. Now, right now, if you were called into a courtroom and you were called to be a witness, do you know what you're allowed to share? What did you see? What did you hear? What did you experience? That's all you're allowed to share. This is what I've experienced of God. This is what I've encountered. This is what I've seen. This is what I've heard. This is what I've tasted. You're not even allowed to speculate, right? Overrun or overruled, overrun, whatever. Hopefully not overrun. You can be an unreliable witness and your character can discredit you. But hear this. The example we just looked at, this woman at the well, she is the unreliable witness. And the Lord still says, I'd love to use that. I can use that. And so the pressure of witnessing is simply, this is what the Lord has done in my life. You should figure out what's happening too, right? This is what he's doing. See, for me, I want to share my story for a minute here. See, I wish I was the woman at the well, because I would have been what I thought much worse. I'd be the person that she'd be avoiding. I'd be the person who was looking at her with judgment and with condemnation. See, I grew up, I'm a PK. My dad's a pastor, same church in Sacramento since I was 2 years old, still going in there. And so growing up, I wanted to make everyone happy, so that looked religious. So I did the religious thing, and I can learn the verses. I could ace the Awana test. I can do all the things. I played drums. And so I'm on the worship team. I'm on the stage. I'm doing all these things. I can do it better than you. But eventually in middle school, I was like, you know what? I kind of want to do everything else. In my people-pleasing ways, like, well, what if I, that looks like a more fun life. And so I became this complete hypocrite, right? I'm judgmental and I'm a hypocrite. This is great. And the Lord, so I start doing this completely bifurcated life where I'm living this life doing whatever I want at high school. Then I'm living this life of looking goody two shoes, judging everyone for doing the very things I do in secret. That's me. That's who stands in front of you. And the Lord, in his amazing mercy, this place of insecurity of wanting people to like me, he's like, you know what? I love you. I love loving you. You can't even earn my love. Even though you do the whole religious thing, you can't earn it. So your story is not about you. It's actually about me. And this boring life of being a good moral boy, which was never compelling to me, the Lord actually opened up the idea of mission. Of, wait, I get to be a part of the most important thing in the world? I can be a part of his story of redeeming the entire creation, and he loves me for that? Oh my gosh, I want more of that. And so to some degree, that's my story. You have to deal with this. This is something the Lord has done in my life. I don't know why I'm that insecure, but the Lord loves me. That's incredible. And so this is what I've witnessed, and that's all we're called to do. What has the Lord done in your life? What has he saved you from? When we witness, we're not required to share the four spiritual laws. Tell your story. I love it. 1 Peter 3:15. This is a verse we often use for the reason we want to have apologetics. But listen what it's actually saying. It's pointing to a story. Peter says, "Always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for the reason of the hope that's in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect." We usually think, okay, we got to defend ourselves because someone's going to come after us and they're going to attack us, and then we have to have our little word judo and use them words against them. That's not what he's talking about here. He's literally saying you're going to open up your life. People are going to see you live differently, and they're going to ask why. And your defense is, the Lord's changed me. Be ready to share that. That's all he's talking about. That literally someone would know you so well that they would say, why do you possibly give your money that way? Why would you invite them to the birthday party? Don't you know what they've said about you? Why would you do this? Why would you serve? You know, to some degree, why do we do these demonstrations here in the community? Why are we giving a bunch of bags to Thousand Oaks High School? Because we want people to say, why? Because we have a very compelling reason. It's not because we just want to do good things. It's because there's a God who loves them like a father, and he actually is going to use our vocal cords, or he's going to use our bank accounts, or he's going to use our backyards to change the world. That's the best, most compelling thing I could have ever experienced. And he's inviting you to say, be ready. The defense is why. And so I kind of want to go back to something I shared in the very beginning as we wrap it up here. Is I'm convinced the reason why mission, we don't do it, is because we're convinced it's being that person we're not. It's being something more than we really are, or it's being somehow different from how I'm wired. You are enough in this. If you're worried about words, use Courtney's story of saying, you know what? It's not about your words. It rarely is about your words. The Spirit of God is at work. You can't even save someone if you wanted to. It's the Spirit of God that wants to work in you. And as we seek to walk in the Spirit more and more, he doesn't want to just say things to you. He actually wants to speak through you to this world. And that's a life of joy. This is not an obligation. This is the invitation. You can experience the Spirit of God, not just to you and your family, but to your neighbors and to people you work with, the people who are on that Zoom screen that you're like, oh, again? He can even work through Zoom. He can work through YouTube. And so the Spirit wants to meet us. The Spirit wants to partner with us. So I want us to close by praying. And I mentioned earlier that just to think of a person or think of your neighbors, I'm hoping that maybe the Spirit of God, while I was speaking, was actually doing something in your own soul. And I want us to spend time praying. Now, this is not just that we would become great, you know, marketers for Jesus, but that maybe the Lord would bring an opportunity that I can create. I can even make my own opportunity that I can have people over and that the Lord would maybe, just maybe, use me in their story. So I'm going to pray. I'm going to have the band come on up. I'm going to ask you to pray with me. Jesus, I thank you, Lord, that someone stepped into my story. God, that someone loved me enough to show me you, even when I felt unlovable. And so, God, I pray for all the names that we are thinking of, Lord, for our friends we work with, Lord, for the people who live next to us, for those acquaintances, Lord, or for many of us, the heartache of someone we love dearly in our family. God, help us to see this different. Help us to see ourselves as your ambassadors who get to share the work you've done in our life. And so, God, as we think of these names, Lord, we pray that you would open up these opportunities, that you would open up the doors, God, that we can just tell how good you really are, of how you've changed our life. So God, thank you. It's in your name we pray, Jesus. Amen.